Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS Cloning Tool, Faster Automated IMS Cloning and Refresh Operations. Today's teleconference will be recorded, will last approximately 60 minutes, and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how the IMS Cloning Tool for ZOS automates, simplifies, and speeds up IMS system cloning and database refresh operations while reducing administration and processing costs. The speakers for today's conference are Margaret Wilson, IMS Tools Market Manager, IBM Software Group, and Kelly Smith, Product Manager, Rocket Software. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our first speaker, Margaret Wilson.
Great. Thank you, Teresa. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the IMS Cloning Tool teleconference call. As you're probably aware and saw the last couple weeks, we had an IMS and DB2 Tools announcement on August 4th. Key to that announcement was the announcement of a new IMS tool, so a new addition to the IMS Tools portfolio, and that tool is the IMS Cloning Tool. Now, I know the DB2 side, we've had a cloning tool for quite a while, but from an IMS tool standpoint, you were pretty much on your own as far as getting traditional cloning methods invoked and created and used in your organization. Most of those were fairly slow, used large amounts of post-processing resources, and pretty cumbersome. So today, Kelly Smith from Rocket Software will tell us about the IMS cloning tool and tell us how it can help us reduce administrative costs, how it can also reduce host and CPU and I/O resource, and how it can create a production copy of your data without sacrificing data availability. So a really neat new tool joining our portfolio, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy the next hour. Now, joining Kelly after the conference call for the question and answer session will be Ron Basilia, who's also a project developer with Rocket Software. And with that, good morning, Kelly. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Margaret. Good morning, everyone. Let's move to slide 2, page 2 of the PDF handout, and let's go through the agenda. So the first thing that I'll be discussing today is trends and directions, so we'll look at that. I want to go through the data cloning terminology so you know what I'm talking about in terms of cloning while we move through the presentation. I'll talk about some use cases for cloning IMS systems and refreshing databases. We'll also talk about traditional copy and cloning methods so that you can understand the contrast to IMS cloning tool. I'll get into storage-based fast replication and some of its advantages, IMS system cloning, and then the challenges that customers have today to access the data. And then we'll be discussing using IMS cloning tool to clone an IMS system by volume, and also refresh IMS databases by data set. Page 3, IMS requires high availability, so it needs fast cloning and database refresh solutions. Fast data replication copy services allow database data to be cloned instantly. Valuable host CPU and I/O time is saved by using the storage processor to make the copy instead of ZOS. Taking advantage of this capability provides the high availability needed in today's data centers. This functionality tends to be used by storage administrators because there hasn't really been any tools that integrate the database management with the storage aspects to drive the fast replication facilities. IMS cloning tool is a storage-aware tool, and it is also integrated with storage systems to leverage fast replication processes. Page 4, IMS cloning tool allows us to intersect what is typically the application domain with the DBA functions. The application domain, the DBA functions, with the storage domain because it is storage aware. So it drives the fast replication process to perform clones, which helps integrate the two organizations. Page 5. An IMS system cloning methodology using fast replication facilities and automation has many operational advantages. First, it simplifies cloning strategies by using automation to coordinate IMS copy operations with fast replication facilities. The automation exposes fast replication facilities to IMS DBAs in a safe and transparent manner. It also automates all of the processes to provide a consistent copy of production. System clones, for example, can be available in less than an hour. The data copy process is performed in the storage processors, which saves significant host CPU and I/O resources. IMS systems can be cloned instantaneously. An IMS cloning tool promotes high availability solutions. It leverages storage-based fast replication facilities from the leading mainframe storage vendors like IBM, EMC, and HDS. On page 6, let's get into data cloning terminology. A clone is an exact replica. And when I'm talking about IMS system and database cloning today, I'm referring to the act of replicating the data, making the replica accessible, and then using the replica in lieu of the original data. On page 7, some use cases for cloning IMS systems and or databases include to run read-only production, so you can offload business processes from production to the clone. You can improve production performance by moving a group of read-only users to the clone. You may run pointer checker utilities from the clone as opposed to the production. You may create test or refresh environments for quality assurance, for tests, for development environments. You may want to apply maintenance and verify the integrity before applying to production. You could use it to stage data warehouse loads to aid in problem determination or to refresh databases into a previously cloned IMS skeleton. And I'll be talking about that last one in a few slides. On page 8, and let's look at how users are cloning IMS subsystems today. This process may be thought of as copying an IMS subsystem. And one way of doing this is to do full volume dumps of the volumes where the production or the source IMS subsystem resides, and then restore these volume dumps on a separate or test LPAR. Now, the reason that these volume dumps must be restored on a separate LPAR is that they would not be accessible on the same LPAR without restoring to different volume serial names, renaming and cataloging the data sets, and then updating the internal IMS information with the new data set names. This process also copies the data twice, which results in a time-consuming process and high host CPU and I/O costs. Now, it is possible to reduce some of the costs of copying an entire IMS subsystem from one LPAR to another by just copying certain sets of data that make up an IMS subsystem, such as just the volumes that contain the database data sets. But if the entire IMS subsystem is not copied or cloned to the test LPAR or whatever LPAR you're using, then there are some additional steps that must be done to make sure that the production and the test LPARs are in sync in order to make the copied data sets usable. For example, say you already have an IMS system installed and available on your test LPAR. And the only data that you need to clone or copy to the test LPAR are the databases. So in this scenario, you would then have to make sure that when maintenance was applied to your production environment, that it was also applied to test. And this is especially true when upgrading to a new IMS version. There's also some additional work of keeping all of the application libraries, the ACB libs, the program libs, et cetera, in sync between the production and the test environments. When a change is introduced to the production environment, that same change also needs to be made to the test system. Finding the cause of problems seen with ACBs and programs or DMBs and the actual database structures that differ can often be difficult and time-consuming. In addition, with the current options, you are still limited to one copied subsystem per LPAR. And if you want to create an additional IMS subsystem, you must go through a full sysgen and configuration using today's methods. Page 9. Now let's look at how users are refreshing IMS databases today. Typically, there are two methods, and you're familiar with these methods that can be used to copy the databases between production and test IMS environments. One is to take the image copy from a production database and then use a recovery utility to restore it in a test environment. You might need to rebuild the indexes if they weren't copied. But again, the problem is that the data is copied twice, once for the image copy and once for the restore, plus any rebuilding of the indexes. So this solution can be costly in time and resources. A second option is to unload the production data and then reload the data into the test environment. Typically, the indexes are rebuilt as part of the reload process. An unload-reload process is typically used when only a subset of the data is needed in the test environment or when there needs to be some masking of the data. And masking can usually be performed with unload or reload user exits. Now, the other method is the unload-load method, and it's much slower than an image copy followed by recovery because the data is accessed hierarchically where the image copy recovery method processes the data sequentially. Again, however, the data is copied twice. And the difficulty with either one of these methods is that changes to any application libraries, the ACB libs, the DBD libs, PSB libs, etc., must be kept in sync between production and the test IMS environments. And sometimes these differences are difficult to detect, rendering the copy invalid. For HALDBs, since they require DBRC registration, there are some additional considerations, such as restoring an image copy that is not registered. And in this case, prior to restoring the image copy would have to be manually registered to DBRC in the test environment. If you choose to use image copies to copy HALDB databases, you must somehow guarantee that the partition numbers are the same in both the production and test recons. This is because the partition number is maintained in the partition datasets as well as in the recons. On page 10, now depending on the method that you can use, some of these methods can be slow and they require the data to be stopped for a long time while the copy operation is performed. They can impact high availability initiatives, so you may have customers or users waiting. They're expensive because they can use large amounts of host CPU and I/O, and for IMS system cloning requires a separate LPAR to house the copy, because otherwise you would have the same volume names and the same dataset names, and that's not allowed on ZOS. On page 11, now let's do a review of storage-based fast replication, because I'm certain that most of you know what storage-based fast replication is. But it is the act of copying volumes or data sets using microcode facilities in the modern storage processors. It's extremely fast. It copies data instantly, and combined with IMS cloning tool and IMS system cloning, on average, can take less than 30 minutes, and database refreshes can take just minutes. It definitely provides the high availability requirements that we need in today's environment, provides a consistent copy of production, and it allows the clones to be available much quicker. And also, it provides a huge cost savings because it doesn't use host CPU and I/O resources. The copy is done in the storage processor instead, which that saves downtime and it saves personnel time. On page 12. Now, on the left-hand side of this page, we have fast replication that can be used by volume. And on the right-hand side, we have fast replication that can be used by data set. Volume replication is used to clone IMS systems. Any storage-based replication tool that copies volumes can be used. And data set replication is used to refresh IMS databases. Any storage-based replication tool that copies data sets can be used. Page 13. Now, this slide shows some other solutions that can be used to copy data. On the left-hand side, you see that by volume, we have TDMS and FDR PAWS. And these tools are normally thought of in terms of migrating data to new disk. However, they can also be used to copy data. They work similar to an on-site mirror. And an on-site mirror would be where you establish a relationship between the source and the target volumes, and you copy the data over to the target volumes, and then you split that relationship at the point in time that you want your clone to exist. And then IMS cloning tool would take over from there. So if you don't have a fast replication utility, but you do have one of these on site, you could actually use these. And then by data set, fast copy or slow copy tools can be used for database copies, but obviously slow copies such as DFSMS, DSS, or FDR defeat the purpose of high availability. Nonetheless, you can still use them. On page 14, volume-level fast replication tools allow data to be replicated within minutes. However, there are at least two basic internal problems. If the replicated volumes have the same volume label as the source volumes, they cannot be varied online. If the replicated volumes retained their volume labels, so when you do a fast replication, you can retain the volume label, but everything else looks like the source. They will be online, but the volume internals are a clone of the source volumes, and therefore the volumes cannot be used. In addition, the data sets cannot be cataloged because their names are already in an ICF catalog that point to the source volumes. Let's move to page 15 to look at some pictorial views of this. So this slide or this page shows an example of cloned volume data access challenges. On the left-hand side, we have a source volume, and this could be source volumes. On the right-hand side, we have the target volume. So note that the target volume label, the VTOC index, the VTOC, and the VVDS are all identical to the source volume. So you can make a clone of the volumes, at least. The target volume is online, offline, but it can't be used. On page 16, in this example, the target volume label is different than the source label, but the volume internals are the same as the source. So in this example, the volume is online but cannot be used. And then page 17, this shows that the data sets on the source volumes, PIMS01, are already cataloged in an ICF catalog, so the target volume data sets cannot be cataloged without first being renamed. So now let's get into IMS cloning tool. Let's go to page 19. IMS cloning tool solves all of those problems. IMS cloning tool has two parts. The first part clones IMS systems, which includes all of the databases. It uses a volume-based fast replication from any of the vendors listed, so it could be from IBM, from EMC, from HDS. You can use also on-site mirrors or software point-in-time copies like the TDMS and FDR PAWS that I mentioned. And after that, it performs the necessary operations so that the data can be used by the cloned IMS system. IMS cloning tool takes an existing IMS system, and that means the complete installation and system generation process was completed, and most likely this is your production system, and creates a new or cloned IMS system from it without having to repeat the entire installation and system generation processes. This is huge. On page 20, the other piece refreshes IMS databases. So it uses dataset-based fast replication, and it uses any of the fast replication dataset copies or slow copy if you want, and performs the necessary operations to enable the clone databases to be used on the same or another IMS system. On page 21, now I'll show you how you can use IMS cloning tool to clone IMS systems by volume. On page 22, As previously mentioned, IMS cloning tool takes an existing IMS system from IMS system and databases and creates a new or a cloned IMS system from it without having to repeat that entire installation and system generation process. It leverages volume-based fast replication facilities to copy the data quickly and speed up the cloning process, and it also saves the CPU and I/O resources. After the volumes have been copied, IMS cloning tool performs volume reconditioning on the copied volumes so that they can be brought online to the same or different or shared ZOS LPAR, solving the challenges discussed in the previous slides. Dataset names are changed on the copied volumes so that they can be accessed from the cloned IMS system without any ZOS ICF catalog conflicts. The volume reconditioning and dataset renaming processes are performed very quickly to reduce the overall IMS system cloning time. And then after the volumes are copied, reconditioned, and reconditioned means that the VTOC and VTOC index and so forth are renamed and the datasets are renamed, then the cloned IMS metadata must be adjusted to accommodate the copied data. The IMS recons, IMS proclib and jobs libraries, the MDA members, et cetera, must be updated to reflect the new dataset names in the cloned IMS system. So let's get into the details on page 23. Now there is a one-time setup for the target system that needs to occur. First, you have to determine what components and configuration options that you want on the cloned IMS system, and then you create the target proclib members in the source proclib. Then you also create the target IMS job members in the source IMS jobs dataset. And the reason that you do that is because when it's cloned, we will use the members for the target system. Now, by default, because the clone is an exact replica of the source, the clone would have the same components as the source. On slide 24, we dig down a little bit deeper. On the left-hand side of the slide, this represents the source IMS, in this case, a production IMS system. It could be a test IMS system that you're cloning somewhere else, possibly for quality assurance, et cetera. And the right-hand side of the slide represents the target or the cloned IMS system. So let's first start on the left-hand side of the slide on the production IMS system. So step one is that the DAS eVols errors that make up the production IMS system need to be identified to IMS cloning tool by using specific vols error IDs or a vols error mask or mask, or SMS storage groups. Step two is that the volume copy process. Now, to gain a static copy of your data and also the source ICF catalog entries, because you want those to be static as well so nothing is changing in there, IMS can be running if you have either IBM Flash Copy Manager or EMC consistency group support. And there are sub-steps that we're automating around that right now, but we'll be done with that very quickly. Otherwise, IMS must be stopped at this time. IMS cloning tool then immediately invokes a DFSMS copy to issue the IBM Flash Copy or Snapshot command to copy the data instantly and back up the ICF catalogs that point to the data sets being copied. Now, once the copy command is complete, which is just seconds, IMS cloning tool can start the source IMS system if it were stopped. At this point, we are done using the production IMS system, and now we'll be working off of the clone. Now, if you were cloning IMS systems that reside on EMC or HDS, Hitachi storage systems, an appropriate storage-based fast replication process is performed before the IMS cloning tool cloning operation is invoked, and a list of the copied storage volumes is passed to IMS cloning tool for use in later steps, but this can all be automated. During the IMS cloning tool copy process, The volume internal identifiers are relabeled, so that's the VTOC and the VVDS. We're actually renaming those data sets. And we will relabel the target volume if it has the same name as the source volumes, and we'll actually vary those online for you so that and we can bring them online to the same or a different ZOS system because we're relabeling the volume identifier to be what it was before the copy occurred. And then from here, we move over to the right-hand side of the slide, which is the target IMS. Now, step three, the data sets on the target volumes are renamed in catalog to a new high-level qualifier, and the data sets are renamed to eliminate the duplicate data set names from an ICF catalog perspective, and also to allow the new data set names to be integrated into the cloned IMS system, into the IMS system. The cloned IMS data sets can then be used on the same LPAR, but integrated into a different IMS system using different data set names. Step four, the next step is to update the cloned IMS system data sets with the new names and vol SARs. And I'll show you what is updated in the cloned IMS when we get to the next page. And step five, the cloned IMS system is then started and then can be used to run offload or application work at this point. Okay, moving to page 25. These are the cloned IMS system updates. You'll notice that the recon data sets are updated. Within there, we have the data set names. The IMS subsystem IDs and vol SARs are updated in the recon records. And those recon records are the header record, the database data set records, the online log records, and the backout records. And then optionally, the following recon records can be updated if they were on volumes that were cloned. And that would be the image copy records, the change accumulation records, system log data set records, and also the recovery log data set records. On page 26, we have some additional updates. The IMS PropLib and the jobs and the user JCL libraries all need the new values for the target IMS system. So we update the IMS ID, the vol SARs, and the data set names and the JCL members within those libraries. Also for the MDA members, the databases or the system data sets, those are all updated to reflect the new data set names. And some of the updates include the recon data sets, the OLDs, and the WADs. So another thing is if IMS data sharing is involved, each additional IMS data sharing member is updated as well. On page 27, IMS cloning tool supports IMS offline cloning, so that means IMS is stopped while the cloning process occurs. IMS data sharing, IMS data sharing with many to less members, and IMS data sharing to non-IMS data sharing. Now we're done with the IMS system cloning, and we're going to move into cloning refresh IMS databases on page 28. So let's look at how IMS cloning tool can quickly refresh these IMS databases while eliminating the manual efforts associated with some of the traditional methods. On page 29, IMS cloning tool uses fast copy technology at the dataset level to achieve the copy speed. It reduces the time needed to clone and refresh databases down to minutes with the use of the fast copy technology, and also its task automation functionality that we'll get into a bit reduces any manual tasks. However, it can also be used with slow copy utilities, as I mentioned, but that does defeat the high availability purpose. It can copy databases across LPARs, or within the same IMS. And regarding the source databases, you can stop the source table, the source databases, or you can use a fuzzy copy, whatever works in your shop. Okay, on page 30, IMS cloning tool database refresh performs automated IMS database refreshes. And one of the things that it needs to do is verify that the source and the target IMS databases are compatible before copying the data so that you don't run into any problems over on the target. It leverages fast replication data set facilities to copy the data quickly, which means it speeds up the refresh process, and of course it doesn't use the host CPU and I/O resources that are used with traditional copies. The database can be copied while the source database is running or while it's stopped. Slow copy mechanisms can also be used to copy the data, but it does negate the benefits of high availability. So the next step is to update the IMS metadata. Now let's look at some of the details of this on page 31. Again, the left-hand side of this slide or this page represents the source IMS, and in this case, a production IMS system. The right side of the slide represents the target IMS system, and that's where you want to refresh the IMS data to. Now, one thing that I need to mention is that before you actually use IMS cloning tool to copy the databases, the target database definitions need to exist. And you can use the simulate capability of the product to identify these. So let's start with the process. Step one is that the source databases to be refreshed are selected by database name. And then IMS cloning tool finds the IMS subsystem name from that and determines if it's active. And then it finds the source and the target databases and indexes if the targets already exist. It determines the dataset names for each database and index, and then it verifies their existence. Step two is checks are performed to ensure that the characteristics of the source and the target IMS databases are compatible. And I have a slide on that in a few minutes. excuse me. And after they're compatible, then it does copy that, but it gets the attributes of the IMS databases and indexes from the source and the target recons, the ACB libs, and the MDA datasets. And so some characteristics that are checked include the type, the access method, number of segments, dataset groups, etc. Step three, the source and the target databases are stopped, so the DBR commands are automated. Optionally, the source databases can be copied while they're running to create a fuzzy copy. However, that doesn't guarantee any transactional integrity on the refreshed copy. Step four, the datasets are copied, and for sites using flash copy or snapshot, IMS cloning tool will invoke these copy facilities. For sites that are using EMC, TimeFinder Snap, or Hitachi Shadow Image, IMS cloning tool will produce the output files describing the source and the target dataset information, so that can be fed into your own fast replication job streams for now. Step five, the source IMS databases are started unless a fuzzy copy was specified in step three. Now let's move over to the right-hand side of the slide. On step six is if the target databases are registered to DBRC, IMS cloning tool updates the target IMS recons. So let's go to the next couple of slides and look at this process. On slide on page 32, I mentioned that IMS cloning tool requires the target database definitions to be set up in advance if they don't exist, and that a simulate could be run to find out what those are. Now, another way to accomplish this is to create an IMS system skeleton. And this is where a cloned IMS system skeleton can be created such that the IMS or that the cloned IMS system contains all of the database definitions. The database data in this case would not initially be copied. It is copied when the database refresh operation is performed after the cloned IMS skeleton is created. On page 33, this is an example of the copy job, and you'll notice that you would specify the database name, see the DBD parameter in the box at the bottom, and from there it finds the IMS subsystem name, it finds out whether it's active, it finds the source and the target database and databases and indexes, and it determines the data set names for those and verifies their existence. Now we also have the global keyword that indicates the IMS DBR command should be issued within the global option to stop the databases on all of the IMS subsystems in the data sharing environment. But if you don't have a data sharing environment, there is a stop job used to DBR the databases on the other LPARs. And then the no FEOV keyword indicates that the IMS DBR command should be issued with the no FEOV option so that the automatic log switch is not done. On page 34 here, we have some of the compatibility checks that are done. And I'll just let you look that over for a minute. We have databases, partition databases, segment information that we check, index and partitioned index information that we check. Okay, on page 35, now these are the use cases that I discussed earlier. Customers are always coming up with different ways to use the product, but I wanted to run through a couple of these. So let's move to page 36. Now, one of the things that you can possibly do is run the pointer checker utility on the clone. Obviously, you have to balance out the value of the IMS pointer checker utility that it provides in the production environment with the adverse effects that it can have on production applications. And then if you deem that it's a better option to run it off of the clone, that would allow you to preserve the availability and the performance of the running IMS production applications. On page 37, a really nice thing is that IMS cloning tool helps you copy HALDB data sets, pretty databases seamlessly. It uses the storage-based fast replication to copy the data instantly, right? And then from there, it updates the target IMS recon to reflect the same partition and reorg numbers as the source recon. And primary and secondary indexes and the ILDS can be also copied to eliminate the index and the ILDS rebuild time. And it also manages the partition number and the gap sequencing. So it automates all of the processes surrounding copying the HALDB databases and some of the headaches there. On page 38, I just wanted to get into some of the benefits and provide you an example of cost savings. IMS cloning tool was designed to promote high availability, and also to leverage fast replication to provide the high availability, but also to reduce the costs associated with the traditional CPU and I/O costs that are associated with traditional utilities. So it can copy production data instantaneously. You can have your system clones available. Generally, I put less than an hour, but they're generally available in about 30 minutes. And the database refreshes are available in just minutes. Again, it just depends on the size there and the time. And it removes the contention on the production environments by offloading some of the work to the clone. And that, of course, reduces some of the administration costs, and the administration costs are also reduced by automating this whole process and by reducing the time that it takes. It executes fast replication in a safe and transparent manner so that the IMS DBAs don't have to worry that they are walking on another IMS volume that has data on it. And this can be done by using the masking or the storage group capability that's set up by the storage administrators. Now, I wanted to provide some example savings, a total savings over 3 years for a site with 1,264 MSUs and 4,290 gigabytes. We estimate that IMS data that IMS cloning tool will save approximately $8.3 million. And a majority of that, there's a number of reasons. The CPU and I/O costs are tremendous by offloading those to the storage processor. And normally, that's not something that, I mean, you could offload the fast replication, but it's the automation piece that pulls it all together and allows it to be done in less time. Another piece of this is renaming all of the data sets, all of the VTOC, the VTOC index, updating the IMS internals. By doing this process so quickly, you save the CPU, the I/O, and the automation provides the rest of the savings. There's also traditional downtime that usually occurs with traditional methods too, especially when you're cloning IMS systems using slow copy methods. So that's reduced in here as well, and that's where some of the savings comes from. So I'd like to thank you for attending. I'll hand the conference over to the operator for polling questions and then product questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret and Kelly. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, please press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Please respond now. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, please press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, please press star 3. Once again, if it was the right level, star 1. If it was not technical enough, star 2. If it was more technical than you needed to hear, please press star 3. Question 3. Do you copy an IMS system and its related databases as a whole today, or need to? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. If not now, but in 6 months' time, press star 3. Question 4. Are you meeting all of your high availability initiatives? If yes, star 1. If no, star 2. Question 5. We hope you enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by digit 1 on your telephone at any time. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. At this time, I'll turn the call over to our speaker while we wait for questions. John Betzel, you may ask your question.
Hi, Kelly. I'd like to reference foil number 24, and I'm interested if you could go into a little more detail on the volume copy process for an IMS subsystem cloning, and in particular, getting the status copy. You mentioned there are cases where IMS might have to be stopped to do this step and other conditions where it wouldn't. I was wondering if you give some more information about that.
Sure. I'll let Ron, the developer, address that question.
Okay. Currently, as Kelly mentioned, there are some consistency-type functionality built into some storage processors, mainly EMC or Flash Copy Manager 2, where you can do a copy of many volumes at a point in time, and it will prevent any updates or I/O from being occurring across the entire set of volumes. So it basically creates a power outage type consistency copy to do that. That's available today. We are working on the process to actually soft suspend IMS updates across volumes. So storage processors that don't have that capability, that we can actually do the copy without having to do that. But that's basically what that means, is that there are some storage processors that do provide that consistency function today. And as long as that's available, is that you can do it without bringing IMS down. In the future or near term, is we'll have the capability is that with, even without the storage processors, we'll be able to copy or clone a range of volumes without having to stop IMS.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Rick Hamilton, you may ask your question.
Yeah, on the same topic, slide 24. So, after you, if you had a situation where you were going from many IMS systems to a few, let's say, you know, 5 to 1, and you took your consistent split, and then you copied the data over, the full data, including the IMS databases. When you start that IMS, how are you handling releasing locks from the different data sharing members?
You mean through the coupling facility type stuff, or?
Well, if it's a data sharing environment and you've got, you know, work going front end, back end work being processed on, you know, the 5-way system there, and then you take a split, a consistent split at that point in time, you're going to have locks being held all over the place. So how do you resolve all that when you bring up the clone system?
Okay, there are
some. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I interrupted you. You can go ahead and finish your.
Well, I mean, the normal process that we're currently using would be is we would emergency restart each individual IMS on the
right
target place and
right
release each of those locks.
Right. We have some processes in place that you can go from, say, an N-way data sharing to either a non-data sharing or to less number of type members. And there's an additional step that you'd have to run for each member that goes in and cleans up those type of things. If you were, you know, it's basically another command or whatever you need to do that it'll go in and take care of cleaning up those type of locks. And part of that with the consistency type function, it is dependent on the emergency restart type of thing or process being done on the clone or the new system.
Right. You don't actually have to bring up all 5 IMSs, though, because you're only cloning the one.
Right. Right. And there are processes that we will go in and clean up the other. You have to tell us which ones you don't want to have in the cloned environment, and we'll
right
go in and clean that type of stuff up.
Okay. Oh, the second question was, and data set online copy then, so you're taking a DVR, so there's an outage there, so you can't basically replicate the data while it's active.
We have an option to do a fuzzy copy, if that's acceptable in your target environment.
Well, if you had but if you've got a KSDS and you've got a split that occurs, you wouldn't catch that unless you stop the database, right?
That is true.
So that's all, I guess.
Ralph Neuber, you may ask your question.
Hi, thanks. Actually, I have several. First off, this is the purchase product. I want to ask the obvious, right? I'm sorry?
You said purchase product?
Yeah. This is the tool that comes with a future IMS release or anything.
No, this is a separately chargeable item line.
Okay. Given that, what is the product suite requirements for supporting this? For instance, it mentions using pointer checker. Do you have to use a high-performance pointer checker from IBM, or can you use a vendor pointer checker? How does that work?
There are no other software tool requirements, and basically it supports all your generally GA IMS versions, but there are no other underlying requirements as far as other tools that you need.
Okay, so can I use my existing suite if it's not IBM?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay. Let me see. You mentioned simulated power failures. What happens in a real power failure? Is this a throwaway setup? If you're in the middle of a clone.
Right. It would be, you would have to, there are, each process that Kelly went through, like as far as copying volumes, renaming data sets, updating IMS internal, stuff like that, those are all restartable steps. So if you're in the process of a clone and power goes out, you can restart from, like say you've copied all your volumes already, you do not need to go back and recopy all your volumes. You can just restart the renaming process.
Okay. In a situation where you're issuing DBRs, what happens when we have an active PSB for 5-10 hours? What happens there when the DBR can't complete?
It basically waits for it, and you can give it a time that it waits for. And I think where you're kind of going on this is that what it does, it pause BMPs and stuff like that. And,
right, like a pseudo abend or something, right?
Right. We currently don't do anything in that arena, so basically it waits for the DVR to occur.
Okay.
We are looking at using or interfacing with some of the other technology in the IMS tools that do pause and, you know, detect BMPs that are currently active and issue a pseudotype event.
Okay.
That currently is not there.
Does it handle rename failures for duplicates? What happens in that situation?
Yeah, there's a lot of things built into the rename process, and basically there is some thought that needs to be done in that to make sure that you're not giving us a mask or whatever that tells us to rename a data set that already exists. So it's not going to create duplicate data sets for you. It will give you a warning. As Kelly mentioned, a lot of it is to, you can run all these processes with a simulate type command, which will go through and give you informational messages before it actually does anything to indicate you know, that there may be some potential problems.
Oh, okay, you're right. That sounds good. Just two more questions.
Okay.
I wasn't real clear on how it manages the internals and makes the changes to the internal control blocks, for instance. Maybe Dynasource and DynaLib, or is that something we have to do ahead of time as part of setup?
No, it actually goes in and based on the renaming of the data sets that occurred, it keeps track of that information of what data sets got copied, what data sets got renamed, what the old data set name is, what the new data set name is.
Okay.
And then it goes in and update. It'll handle all your dynamic allocation members, all your recons, JCL libs. There's a few other cases, like some of your default IMS subsystem IDs and stuff like that. In your res lib, those things get updated as well.
Okay, great. Last one, setting up DASD allocations and calculations, how's that accomplished?
Setting up I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it has to have an exact amount of DASDY to copy to. So do you install a couple strings of unused DASDY and target them as the clone DASDY, either full volume or data set level incremental?
Yeah, that's a good question, because actually what a lot of people have done, and this is from experience with some of the DB2 cloning tool, most of the production environments usually have enough volumes to say, okay, I'm going to copy in this volume, and I have another volume that I can copy to. And you can set up any number of clones if you want to copy those. So typically in a production environment, what we've seen is that they do have enough volumes to allocate and to copy and clone to.
Okay.
In test environments, though, is that that's not always the case. And usually there's lots of test environments, you know, on different volumes. And there are processes that you can do, data set type copies, copy a couple of volumes, say you're going like from 10 to 2 or whatever, copy the two volumes, and then copy data sets from the other 10 and put them on those two volumes, and then the rename process and the updating can still occur that way.
Okay. You just triggered another question.
Okay.
Is there any consideration for flexibility for targeting maybe storage groups or pools?
That's actually already built in.
Okay. That's it then.
You can do that.
That's
yep.
it. That's all I have. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Nevis, ready? You may ask your question.
Hi. I know this is a cloning tool that creates a copy of your production IMS database. I was just wondering, in terms of if you want to create a read-only production so that you can offload the other non-production-related activities to this clone, is there any way of keeping the production IMS and the clone in sync?
We currently don't do anything as far as once a clone is created of propagating any type of updates or anything like that. We don't have anything available to do that
today.
I guess the best answer would be is that when you need to keep it in sync, it would be able to run another cloning process. And one of the things I wanted to say is that the, Kelly mentioned that in some of our environments, or what we've seen is that very large environments can be cloned and created within 30 minutes. The majority of that time basically is going in and renaming and recataloging the data sets, which does not affect your production environment. The only time that anything happens to the production is basically to sync it up for a time that we can do volume type copy. So it's really a short period of time. I'm not sure what type of workload or application you're looking at, but if it's the possibility of cloning on a daily basis or whatever, is that would probably maybe a solution that you can use.
Okay. Thank you. I knew that was the answer, but I just wanted to confirm that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Rick Hamilton, you may ask your question.
Yes. Going back to the volume cloning, once you've done it the first time and you have the system basically cloned, if you were to do this, you know, multiple times, really the only thing that's going to change probably is the databases. Because can you set it up to where just the storage groups that those volumes exist are cloned and it would still be a consistent split?
That is correct. That's basically once it's done the first time, it's just a matter of executing the steps again and you have another clone created.
So I would expect future clones, if they only included the storage groups that have the database on them, then they would go faster than that initial one, which had the whole system and stuff.
That's true. The majority of the time, again, is the renaming and recataloging of the data sets. So if the number of data sets is reduced, the time would be short.
But if I don't care about that, I mean, if I'm wanting you to go to a separate Plex with a separate DASDY farm, can you do that to where I want the same volume names and everything can be the same? Because I'm thinking in a DR situation, I've lost DASDY. I want to go back to my last copy that I took, and that's where I want to run my workout until I fix production.
Okay, so you want to go from a different Plex. Currently today is that the copy process. There are some things that could be done to to handle that type of environment. I guess I'm not really understanding what you think there might be a problem with number of volumes increasing or data sets increasing or.
Well, I'm just saying that if I'm using this process to clone an IMS environment to a separate Plex, because I'm looking at it as maybe as a DR place that I would go should there be a problem in production and you know, we're hosed, and I route over to the place where I've got this cloned environment.
Okay.
Using this product here, it takes a snapshot every day.
Mm-hmm.
You would just push the updates to the databases from the previous clone, or would you clone everything entirely?
Oh, okay. We actually clone everything entirely, and then so we could create a clone, like you said, once a day. But the process, as far as actually applying the updates and everything, would still be your standard recovery type processes. Would still be need to be done against the cloned environment that you've created.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Love that.
Now, it would be possible on a periodic basis, say you created a cloned environment for DR, is to periodically during the day is to copy some critical databases or something like that over there.
Right, and there'd be no outage to production work when you take this consistent split, right?
The
wouldn't
consistent
expect to slow down or anything.
Right. There's a sub-second. You know, maybe if you get up to several hundred type volumes, maybe a second or two of a pause,
right,
so to speak. But there's no shutdown and restart.
Thanks.
There are no further questions at this time. And I will now like to turn things back over to your speaker for closing comments.
Margaret said she had to leave early, so I think we're all set.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation.